Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Kate.
Hi.
And Matt.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about legacy and public perception, and this is very much inspired by recent celebrity deaths and the very different public responses that they received. But before we get into talking about dead people, what have you been enjoying lately?
Ooh, I think this is a good one. I will say Weapons. I saw Weapons last night, and I think it's like next to Sinners, it is like the best horror movie of the year. Like, I think those two movies have really shown like original stuff is good, actually.
Yeah.
And you can be like entirely in your lane and do very well. It's by Zach Kregers, who did Barbarian. I believe this is his sophomore film. It is weird. It is funny. It is graphic. And it really just, like, anytime you think it's going one way, it goes another. But then in the third act, you kind of solve the entire mystery yourself, but you're not mad about that, which I think is really important because thanks to M. Night Shyamalan, we have all said that if you can spot the ending, it's not good. No, the reveal actually still works very well here.
Yeah, no. If anything, it's the opposite for me a little bit, where it's not that I want to see the ending coming, but I want there to have been enough clues that I'm not like, oh, so you just hit a really, really critical detail until the end so that you could have a... Like, that sucks. I hate that so much in mystery shows.
Yes.
I'm still a big proponent of, we made a bunch of shows like Columbo where we just showed that we showed what happened at the beginning, and then you have to basically, we already know the ending, we just have to come back and figure it all out. Is just
see how the clues unfold. I do like that.
I just don't think people can do it well.
No, I don't disagree. And I think that like that's why Weapons works really well, because the mystery, and it's in all the trailers, is 17 kids go missing at 2:17. Nobody knows where they went. They just all walked out of their house, and we see different perspectives leading up to solving it, but we start with the end point.
That's cool. I like that.
Which I will say, to Matt's point, I've started, the longer I've sat with Glass Onion, the more I've like started to not like it because of those things.
I haven't watched it since it came out, and I kind of want to go back and see how I feel about it now.
I think once you get past a few of the good, like, I guess, I'm not going to say memeable, but like those type parts, I don't think the story's actually that good. I was not that high up when it launched, and I think, like, much like Kate, I've definitely fallen off of it. I'm not going to say it's a bad movie, but I definitely don't think it's that good.
Has Knives Out held up for you?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I was like, that one I think was legit very good.
No, that one, I think that one holds up pretty well and very good. I think watching that one and then Glass Onion, it just really shows the night and day of, like, I don't know what we were doing here.
Yeah, that's fair. You see the trailer for the new one? Well, the teaser, the very soft, it's barely a trailer.
Yeah, no. I wrote something up on it, but I don't remember it because it was...
Mostly I just remember that he has longer hair now and being like, oh, all right. Like, you're changing up the aesthetic a little bit, like maybe a time skip or something, but there's not really enough to actually have any opinion on the story or what they're doing.
Yeah.
And again, stacked cast is the other thing I remember. But yeah, what about you, Matt? What have you been into?
Let's see. I know it's August now. I've just been doing my summer usual thing of, I've been playing a bunch of CFB, and now Madden is here, and I am checking that out, and that's pretty much what I'll be rolling and doing until Anno gets here in November. And
nice.
I am done. Leave me alone. I don't know any of you.
Beautiful. I almost was going to bring for my thing the internet, because I just rebuilt an electric guitar from the ground up, and the amount of knowledge that I did not have in my head going into that project for how to do it. And then I was able to just like sit down on my computer and be like, how do I add this to it if I want to add that? And being able to get that information and like wrap my head around it, I was like, this is cool as hell. I wouldn't have been able to do this as a kid. But for a media thing, Lost Media has been like a little bit on my radar lately, of just these weird little things that we have, like snippets of like, here's a demo that got leaked, or here's like behind the scenes photos of like a scene that never made it into the movie. And all of that weird stuff to me is just always really interesting. What kicked this off was at the, I think night one at the LA show of the My Chemical Romance tour, they straight up said, in like 2013, we recorded a bunch of songs and scrapped an album. Here's one of those songs. And they just played a song that no one had ever heard. But like called it out and they were like, yeah, this is from the album that we deleted that you all know used to exist. Like, and obviously the fandom is a bunch of feral dorks and they all went like fully into it. And I love that. But yeah, then just seeing like the deep dive that people have done on like, well, in this interview, they say this and over here they do this. And yeah, just Lost Media and Internet Detectives has been a real source of joy for me this week.
Awesome.
And yeah, where can people find you online?
You can find me online at Uma Mithrandir on absolutely everything. Yeah, mostly Blue Sky. More Instagram now, but mostly Blue Sky. That's where I'm at my annoyingest.
Yeah, you can find me, I guess, on everything at DadM18, and then obviously any writing and stuff I do at bowytho.net.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at most, always Alex, and that's the only place that I am. So yeah, come find me. Would love to hear from you. And now let's talk about dead people, which for me, this episode obviously started with the passing of Hulk Hogan and Ozzy Osbourne, and specifically a post on Blue Sky from Nug.monster that was like, Ozzy Osbourne dies, enjoy hell, complimentary. Hulk Hogan dies, enjoy hell, derogatory. And I think for me, what that really captured was that this is a dude who was like beloved in his heyday, who then became controversial and terrible the longer his life went on. And then a guy who kind of he flipped it, who started out in controversy and then did a silly reality TV show on MTV and became everyone's bumbling grandpa.
Yes.
And then, yeah. And so like seeing those two guys kind of switch places and seeing how decisive I think the public was on it of like, we miss Ozzy, Hogan can rot, was kind of the immediate pushback, or not pushback, the immediate response. And I just thought that was super interesting. I wanted to talk about it because it, I feel like there were still also though people who there were a couple people I saw that were like, Hogan was complicated, not nearly as much as you normally see. And Kate, do you want to talk about that a little bit of how
this
was a breath of fresh air for celebrity death?
Yeah. Well, not even just celebrity death, but just public facing person death, because there have been a lot of crappy people who have died in like the last 5 years, and all of them, it's like they had a complicated history or a complicated legacy, but we should not be mean to them. And it's like, no, we should be mean to dead people. Because they don't deserve to be remembered fondly. And yeah, that's fine. So I at least like that nobody was looking sideways at people like taking a piss on Hulk Hogan's grave. And I think that it's not even just the Hogan of it all. It is just the concept of like, it's like, just because somebody died doesn't mean I have to be nice to them or their memory. I can still disrespect them if they deserve it.
There were definitely people who were like, I'm not going to pee on the grave, but I'm not going to stop you either. And that was kind of new in a weird way.
Yes.
And yeah, so, and obviously this conversation goes way beyond these two figures. This was just a recent and relevant framing device. And again, with them being so juxtaposed culturally, it was kind of a good way to get into it. Because I think when we look at collective memory specifically, we have to remember that like what you as a person know isn't collective memory.
Yeah,
like whatever random factoid you have, like that's not, you know, we, and that's why it was so interesting to see that like, oh, the collective memory of Hulk Hogan is already that he was a bad person. Usually there's a little bit of a buildup, because like you were saying, there's that they're complicated, we need to give space to it. And like I think even in like the wrestling subreddits where I saw posts about Hogan, people were like, okay, anyway, like what, like moving on, just like a complete disregard for it. And it, I mean, if anything, it kind of, I think, speaks to the last like what, 10, 15 years of his life since like the Gawker lawsuit.
Yeah, I think so. I also think it just like, because I've been thinking about this more and more, is I think it is just easier to piss on somebody's grave if they weren't integral to you in any way. And like, no shade at wrestling fans, but it really does not matter that much. He does not have a long legacy of content articles, books, movies. Like, there's nothing, like, he shaped wrestling But it's not the same. It's not the same as when Anne Rice died. It's not the same. Yeah. Like there are varying levels to things. And even then, mm-hmm. I'd say like she was very important to a very subsect of people, specifically horror fans. And I think that when they're not all encompassing, when they are not the totality of pop culture and you have been able to escape them or they're older, it makes it a lot easier and it makes it more, I don't want to say more okay, but like there's no thinking about it. Like you're not really attached to that. So of course it can go.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I will say about Hulk Hogan is most of you are like what we do know is a demographic and probably a little younger. And so we do kind of miss, because you could argue his heyday probably more the 80s where none of you are born in versus like the 90s. I do think you have a period in which I think you could probably talk about more, obviously, like you said, the heyday and some moments and everything else. I just don't think most of the people that are actually online are probably in that age demographic where they were alive in the 80s. And if they were not making memories in the 90s. I think you can argue, like you said, it's kind of outgrown him and what we've seen before for wrestling. But I do think there is a subset of like stuff.
I think the
because like Anne Rice means nothing to me. I didn't even know if she was dead.
No, 100%. That's why I said even then, like nobody has to care that Anne Rice died except for like horror fans and specifically vampire people. Like it meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my taste is shaped by her. But like I do think when you're in these pockets, like, and I think it also goes to like people knowing the history of people or knowing what they did, knowing what happened, knowing what they were remembered for. Because like mm-hmm. if you don't know anything and you don't Google them, like you're not going to think anything. But I will say my only Hulk Hogan memory I have is that one. Well, I guess outside of that crappy VH1 TV show. Is that for the longest time, I thought Hulk Hogan was Farmer Fran in The Waterboy.
He may as well be.
Oh, okay. I'm just going to ignore that.
I looked it up. That character was based on Hulk Hogan, but I did not differentiate the two. So, like, my brain did the thing where, like, Hulk Hogan was in The Waterboy and he wasn't. That's the most. I do not care about him.
I dabbled in pro wrestling a little bit as a kid and like watched some of it, and that was like post peak Hulk Hogan. So even then my familiarity is only so much. And that, I mean, like you guys are saying, like not having that closeness really opens me up to being able to scrutinize a little bit more and like because even with something like, you know, oh, he popularized wrestling. He did that by popularizing himself, and he did that by union busting and screwing over other wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So like even the one like thing that you can say about his career, like he did this and it was really good, it's like he did that by hurting other people. So like how good was it? And yeah, it just gets really, really weird. I think similarly, like my cultural knowledge of Ozzy Osbourne for a long time was biting the head off a bat. And that was the extent of it, you know, like I knew he did music, but the only thing I knew about him outside of that was that he bit the head off a bat once, which also wasn't even the first time he bit the head off an animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a lot of animal abuse.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, Matt, you missed this before when Kate and I were talking pre-recording the last line of Ozzy Osbourne's controversy section on Wikipedia. Osbourne admitted to shooting 17 of his own pet cats during a drug-fueled rampage in the 80s.
Yeah, that happens when you're on a drug-fueled rampage.
Right? But this is the dude that just like a few weeks ago died and everyone was like, what a saint he was. What a...
Because our age that is on the internet making these posts only remember him as like cranky grandpa on the Osbournes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going back to that collective memory thing, because, I mean, like, we're talking about, like, well, who's online and who's having the conversation? Like, that's what's steering it maybe more than anything.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the demographics that are online discussing these people or writing up the in memoriams or whatever, that is kind of what's guiding how we remember it. So when it is just people who the most exposure they have is the Osbournes or the Gawker lawsuit or... you know, whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, of course that's going to be kind of how we steer into it, is just, well, who's even talking? And I do wonder, when people have a lot of bad things in it, is it that the people who are fans of them are kind of like stepping back from the conversation so they can hold on to their good memories of it? Like, let's not taint this thing that I have from when I was seven.
I mean, probably. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, what something of art, of entertainment does to somebody at some point goes beyond what the actual people that were, that made or did that art and entertainment, and what that affects.
No, I 100% agree there, because I do think that there are certain things that, like, it's funny because, like, it is the reason why I tried very hard not to talk about Tolkien with anybody else, because, like, he was an H.P. Lovecraft, and he, like, literally wouldn't let Nazis read his books, but he also didn't have any non-white people in Lord of the Rings, except for the people on the other side that were supporting Mordor. Like, and I don't care about that. I saw myself in those books because of the stories that were being told. And so I think, like, to Matt's point, like, when we look especially at legacies and how they get talked with, I think talking about legacies in a way is easier for people to talk about than people that are alive, because they're dead. Like, they're not getting anything after this. So it's almost like a sigh of relief. I'm not going to lie, I have at least felt recently is a sigh of relief sometimes when a problematic celebrity dies, because I have seen posts where somebody's like, oh, cool, I can go back to doing X again, because they're not going to get the royalty. And I think that the fact that people are clenching themselves waiting to, like, stop boycotting, like, that wasn't really your line. That person never stopped being important to you. You just stopped posting about it. And, like, that's neither here nor there, because the line is different for everybody. And I'm personally not morally policing the things that people have outside of, like, you know, some things. I would like to not share an Uber with somebody blasting Diddy in this current age. Yeah. But I think that is really, like, what this culture has become, because there's so much connectivity online that, like, people just, it's almost like they want somebody to die so then it can be theirs again. Because I do think we form connections with entertainments and stories that really we do detach from the people who wrote them, the people who made them, the people who were in them. And it becomes ours, but then you just have, like, the overall thing around it.
Yeah, it's all the baggage with it.
It just bugs me, because it's just such a dumb logic. If somebody's still making money, they still have estates. Oh no, the bad guy. So instead of going to the bad wife, or the bad wife died, now go to the bad husband.
Because I've
go
seen
to the
people,
terrible children. Like,
somebody's
still making,
like,
money.
Oh, I can't wait for so and so to die so I can start reading these again. Or I can start, like, what I think Gaiman specifically was one I kept seeing. And I was like, when he dies, his people, like, what?
the things that he. So here's the thing is, when a celebrity dies, the odds of new information being introduced that you now have to factor into whether or not you watch it are significantly lower. It's not zero. There could still be somebody coming forward and being like, here, I watched him kill 70 chimps, like, or something, you know, like that, like some horrible thing could come up. Odds are low, but it could happen. When they're alive, it's like, you know, I mean, how many of us opened up Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever, and we're like, Neil Gaiman did what?
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's like, I think you're right that when someone's alive, it gets a lot more difficult to talk about it, but then you get people who are like, can't wait for them to die and doing, like, a countdown, basically.
I think too, like, what we've seen, like, when we think about that is to go with more dead celebrities, Michael Jackson and Kobe Bryant. Like, I think Kobe significantly more than Michael.
To be fair, you're not allowed to bring up the stuff about Kobe anymore.
No, you're not. So, like, because he had a
tragedy. And people actually don't know what a settlement means.
Like, he settled out of court. He admitted to raping that woman. Like, I didn't forget that. Like, I know.
You're not allowed to bring that up. People lose their fucking minds.
They do.
Anymore about that.
Like, it is insane. It's the circumstances of the death as to whether or not you can say, oh, yeah, no, that rapist was okay because he had a tragic ending. Or how far away you are from it. Like, the trial with Michael Jackson doesn't get brought up anymore, but I don't, part of it I think was like, do not touch Michael Jackson. The other part was just, it has been so long. Like, there's almost a depreciating effect with some people. If their pop culture contribution was large enough, which he changed music. Yeah. So it's kind of like a scale, I think. Like, what is it? Like the half-life of like when radiation stays around, it's almost like the radioactiveness stays longer if you didn't do something really grand to affect the large scale of whatever your expertise in entertainment was. And then if you didn't, then it's like, oh yeah, no, like you need to be buried under concrete, and that is the only way we can handle it.
Oh yeah. So we have season tickets to one of the theaters here that has like touring Broadway shows. And just a few weeks ago, we went to see MJ, the Michael Jackson musical. And man, did that gloss over and not even touch on really anything significant or serious with him. And it was more just like a, you know, oh, this is a, basically like the main drama of it was you seeing how the perfectionism of his father eventually worked its way into him and like caused him to have tense relationships with other people creatively. And it's not that that's not a Michael Jackson story, but it definitely was like, let's not touch this one really, really ugly part of things. Let's just focus on it was maybe the most I've seen someone try to divorce art from artist while still talking about the artist. Which is genuinely interesting to try to do that. But yeah, I remember the whole time it's centered on the Dangerous tour, which I think was like early to mid 90s. And I'm pretty sure at that point there had been at least one lawsuit already. Right. Yeah,
I think so.
So yeah, it was just interesting to see how they handle it. But I think you're right. It's like, well, if we say that Michael Jackson is bad, how much do we have to try to like uproot from culture?
Yeah. I mean, like I say this. True, like we all like okay. The other one I'm thinking about, like in that too, is David Bowie, because David Bowie had a lot of sex with a lot of underage girls, and like was admitted.
And we don't rip on him the way we rip on Anthony Kiedis.
No,
which maybe we should.
Maybe we should. Now,
also maybe we should rip on Anthony Kiedis harder. I think.
but like, or even like Alfred Hitchcock, right? Like. He absolutely terrorized Tippi Hedren his stars, but he's a founder of modern horror, and he will always have that. That is his legacy.
Well, so that,
the
that's
abuse
the
is in there,
is,
but the legacy overshadows anything else.
He also, it's one of the most frustrating things to me, where he established this idea that it's okay to abuse your actors if the movie is good at the end.
Yes. He did establish that. He did establish that.
I mean, to be fair, we all watched The Last Dance, and we proved that that is okay.
You can be an asshole if you're great.
You are allowed to do that if you are the very, very, very best. If you're only second, or you're only good, or you're, you know, maybe very best. No. But if you are the very, very, very best, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so even there, that like with Hitchcock, that's where it's like, I know that we remember his filmography, but like we also need to remember the method of his filmography, which I think for the most part, people are very willing to admit that about Hitchcock, but it's also very quickly hand waved.
Yeah.
And I do wonder how much of this comes down to, timing both of the death and of the discovery of those things. Cause there are definitely people who were, you know, terrible, but put out a bunch of cool movies or music or whatever. And the terrible things were known, but in an era where it was like, well, that's just how men are. Or they weren't discovered until way after that person died. And then we're like, well, we've been enjoying these movies for 60 years. So.
And it's, well, yeah, I mean, there does come a point, to be fair. You can ask the question, obviously, thing of like, does it matter to an extent? And you're like, oh, that's bad. But also, so do you want to burn all the movies that exist?
Yeah.
Do we want to burn all the records?
So
do we
want to
burn
gonna,
everything? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, at what point does it really matter? Yeah. Depending on the context of the conversation.
And that's what I was going to say to that too. So I didn't find out. Like, my family wasn't really plugged into pop culture when I was younger, like at all. Like this is like, mm-hmm. and honestly, being as plugged into it as we are outside of tabloids, this is a new phenomenon. Seeing every single thing that somebody did or said is a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So when I found out that John Wayne was literally a white supremacist, it was hard and people were like, oh, well, you want to support him? Well, one, he's dead. Two, like the entirety of my childhood was shaped by watching John Wayne movies with my grandfather because my grandfather loved Westerns. My grandfather had no idea about it. Now, I do think there is a certain type of person who's like, John Wayne was the best person in the world. And clearly understands why you don't like him because he was a white supremacist. And then I just think that there are people who like, cool, I entered this without knowing anything about this person. And that is still my good memory of this thing. And I do think that like when we play with legacy and overall memory, ultimately people have their lines and people also have very different exposures to the people making the art. And the event itself. And I think that that is something that is harder to do with recent stuff. I think it's easier to do with like Kubrick, Hitchcock, John Wayne. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like probably the most interesting part of this conversation, because I do think that it really, as you kind of dig that out, you see how many people are hypocritical, but only when it is about something that they don't deeply care about. And that's when it gets, which why I think there is like the radiation scale of being a bad person is different for different people, depending on how much like cultural capital they built with fond memories for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Or how many championships they've won.
Yeah.
No, and
on that note, I was going to say, have you guys heard the Daniel Tosh joke about Kobe Bryant?
I have.
Where he, apparently there was like some commercial he did in the 2000s where he's like, hate me because I'm a winner. Hate me because I, and did the whole punchline is just like, we hate you because you raped someone. Your success has nothing to do with it. And it's like, oh, that's like bleak and a shock joke. But it's like, it goes into that idea of, I mean, one, like you said, how attached are we? I don't know that Daniel Tosh is a huge basketball fan. That's a very...
No, he's a Miami Dolphins fan like me, and we both have suffered for a long, long time. That's why he threw a sword through Nick Saban's face at one time.
But I was going to say, like, I think it's that thing of, it's not just about talking about, you know, like, oh, can we separate them from their art and still enjoy their art? But it's also like how we talk about artists kind of tells the next generation of artists of what is and is not acceptable.
Yeah.
But does it, though?
I mean, it should. Like, the fact that we are like, hey, abusing your actors to get a performance is not okay. Ideally, we eventually shut down that idea and people stop making movies.
But
by
we didn't. But we didn't. We didn't. Like,
what are you talking about?
Blair Witch did
the same thing and started winning a ton of stuff. We're great.
That's what I'm saying. That was our opportunity to shut this down.
Yes.
Like, or... If we had responded more appropriately, maybe people would be like, oh,
okay,
fucking
I do think that's fair. It is something that we don't do and we probably should do. But
so here's the problem I got with this thing and that argument. I don't disagree. But at the end of the day, people want the very best and they don't really care who gives it to them. And the main time, every time something this comes up, and obviously, I guess we talk about moving forward a little bit of, I would think of Imagine Dragons. Where the people themselves and the band themselves have done so much and do a lot of activist work, but people
hate
them
so
much.
They're one of the first bands to put a Palestine flag on stage.
But you know what? We have to hate them because we don't like their music or they did something. But it's like...
I was gonna say, but they're Imagine Dragons.
But here's the thing, though. If you go by the proxy, or not the proxy, but by the assumption of what you're saying of like, well, the next generation, we need to make good people and people who politically are active and people who care about other people and do stuff, they fit all of that. But people would still rather listen to Kanye than them.
Yeah.
People who still listen to Kanye, that's its own episode.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, essentially, we can talk about we want better people, we want better entertainers and artists, but then people just want to be entertained and see the best of the best. And that some it will fall to this wayside.
Well, the funny thing is, though, is like I would argue that I do think Imagine Dragons actually does make really good music. But I think that like the thing with Imagine Dragons, I don't think it's about the best of the best. I think what Imagine Dragons is about is once something becomes a cultural meme, it doesn't break from that. It's the same thing with Nickelback, like whatever about Nickelback, but like once something, like once the hive mind of the internet has decided this thing is bad, no mm-hmm. matter how much good they put into the world, and I think Imagine Dragons, like you said, is the perfect example of this, they don't get to escape that. But it's funny yep. because the opposite is, if everybody's decided that your stuff is great, you also don't get to escape that if you just, like, are terrible.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's a best of the best, but I also do think it is, like, how many people decided to make the same joke one random Tuesday, and then that became a thing, and now it yes. is everywhere.
No, I don't disagree, but I do think at the end of the day, people are going to want, whether it's the best of the best or not, they're going to still go to things that they believe they like. Regard when yeah. it yeah. all will go out well, to the wayside.
And that really gets into the question of, like, I guess, for to improvise a phrase, like, media nutrition, where, like, the same way that we talk about food, and it's like, well, you shouldn't have this, and you should have that, and, like, it requires a certain amount of knowledge and critical thinking. And I think that where the three of us are is that, like, we wish that people thought about media that way. And that's just not what happens, is people just want things that taste good. They just want, you know, whatever, like, they want Doritos, they want McDonald's. And it's like, I can't fault them for that. I'm not going to say those things don't, like, have an appeal. It's just, you know.
You should be shamed if you like McDonald's. No, you should legitimately be ashamed if you
like
McDonald's.
I don't know the last time I've been in a McDonald's, Matt, to be clear. I'm just saying, I get the idea that, like, there's a value to being critical with your consumption, but I yeah. recognize that it is hard to get that to be a shared cultural value yeah. that we should be critical with our consumption Ooh. And critical with how we remember and discuss people.
Well, it all goes back to capitalism. That's just what it is. I know, Matt. No, like, money driving is doing everything, and we're seeing it with, like, the products that people are buying, like, everything that's happening, like, and in a way, like, the bad things or the good things that people are investing in, it is something that is decided in this, like, online space where, like, nobody is doing what they say they are. Half the people shelling you products got it for free and know it doesn't work. And I think it mm-hmm. is the same way with, like, cultural capital that people maintain as well. And the longer that I have, like, we've talked about pop culture in this way, or, like, thought about things or seen things, I do think that the world would be better without social media. I do not think it ever should yeah. have come around. We are at net negative now.
Yeah, I mean, and if we're gonna, yeah, like, because with social media, there was this thing of, like, people are connected. You can find people who like the thing that you like. But then it also, I think it was that thing of, it's an echo chamber machine. And yeah. then it turns into, somebody made a funny post about Nickelback, and now 15 years later, Nickelback continues to be a punchline. I don't know the last time I heard a new Nickelback song. I'm so disconnected from what Nickelback is putting out there, but I just am told by the internet that it's bad. For all I know, they're putting out the best music that's being made right now. I don't think that that's true, but it could be, and I wouldn't know because the internet just tells me they're bad. Nickelback didn't do shit to me, to be clear.
So here's the thing about Nickelback. So one, there's a few things of, I've still heard more Nickelback songs at karaoke than I do a lot of other people's songs.
Yeah.
Got some karaoke bangers. Two, the only things I've known from my digging of Nickelback, of trying to discover this thing over the years, is one, people didn't like that they were 40 and dressed like they were in their 20s because somehow we still hate that. And thing, and then obviously kind of not quite the David Bowie situation, but kind of, and there's some of, like, you know, like, all groupies of, like, whatever, with maybe
nobody,
like,
was
women.
Checking IDs,
yeah, and so we don't know, so we don't have anything there from that, but that's the only thing I got. But the biggest thing I've seen from them is the fact that they were, like, 30 to 40 year olds who dress like their quote unquote 20s, which I still have not understood that, because I see how people dress these days and I'm like, I think some of you still dress like you're 15. So, like, I don't know what the problem is. Also, I don't understand the problem. You want to just magically make people wear terrible clothes?
Yeah. Also, we're going to do a quick tangent on fashion. There's something very frustrating to me about, like, the fashion from when I was younger coming back in and people being like, well, you can't wear that. You're old. It's like, it doesn't matter that I'm old. I know how to do it. Like, we are, like, that
I haven't
was
changed
us.
My wardrobe. So I'm still wearing what I'm wearing. And people are like, oh, you're like, no, I look great now because I never changed. And back in fashion because I never actually bought anything new.
Oh yeah. If I see kids wearing a studded belt, I'm going to put my car into a wall. Like that's mine.
Oh,
I want it back.
It's funny. I think like somebody told me the other day, like when I showed up to an event, like where it was like a flannel and like a cut up Scream shirt and like black shorts and like combat boots. And like, I was like, this is how I wanted to dress. This is what I wanted to be back when my mm-hmm. mom said this wasn't presentable. I'm just doing me. And they were like, that's such a cool new style. It's like, no, this is me trying to channel the part of my life that I missed right now. And I fully admit that this is where I am in my quarter life crisis. But it looks
good. You think you're at the quarter life?
Yeah. That like 30, well, I'm like right below it. Yeah.
No, the problem is we actually don't know what midlife crisis is because we actually don't know we actually don't use the proper age gap. You're probably closer to a midlife than a quarter life.
You need to never say that to me again.
Well, you said the half-life thing, and if you don't know how the half-life works...
I believe in medical science. Kate is at a quarter-life crisis.
I need you to never bring that up ever again.
No, I love when people talk about that. I'm like, no, all of you are actually closer to midlife to post-midlife crisis than you are actually into a whatever. We just actually think it's like in their 50s, but most people don't know what life expectancy is. Because life expectancy is 70 to 72. Your midlife crisis is when you're like 35.
That's fair.
I hate you.
I believe in medical science. It's fine. But anyway, so yeah, back to the whole
thing. I know. I need you to understand the psychic damage that my husband just did to me.
I'm so sorry. Here's the thing. The other day I was driving home from work and thinking about how like I am at midlife, but I haven't had a crisis yet, as far as I know. So I'm just kind of waiting for that to hit.
You'll buy a new car soon. It'll be fine.
I really like my car, though. I drive a normal size car that can fit things in it, and that makes me happy.
To be fair, I thought you were gonna say I drive a Buick, and I was like, you know what? That makes total sense.
Oh no, I have a Honda Fit.
That's you know what? I forgot you were from Portland, so never mind.
I don't even know where I would get a Buick in this city.
I forgot you guys just learned how to pump your gas like 4 years ago.
I grew up in Washington. I know how to pump my gas. But anyway, so yeah, I guess my question for you in all of this is, when it comes to public perception, does it matter that we have like a complete picture, or does it just matter if we have like the vague impression of who someone was that is like the needles pointing the right way?
My better question I have is, does it matter if they're alive or dead? Is that really an actual question?
I think it does.
I think it does.
Okay. Kind of don't, but okay.
Because again, I think, because when you die, the amount of new information coming in is lowered. So the opinion on you is less likely to change.
And people are stupid and think that money is no longer going to that person or their family or their interests, because trusts don't exist apparently in their.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I can't support them while they're alive, but they're dead.
No,
it's fine. I'm just like, I don't know what we're doing here.
No, is it factually wrong? Yes. Is that what people think? Also, yes. Like I do think it matters if they're alive or dead, because people want, like, because at the end of the day, boycotting, separating art from artists, not separating art from artists, all of that, especially when it's done publicly, increasingly what I am seeing is people just want to find a way to skirt it all, so that they can find a loophole for them to get the thing that they really like. And if they don't really like it, or they have no connection to it, they can throw it out immediately and it doesn't matter. And I think that that is why, if they're alive or if they're dead, is important. Also, to like, what is the legacy they leave, or the memory that's left like in the wider space? Yeah, I do think if you're dead or alive does matter. Because like, now the sum of your pop culture influence essentially takes over, and you have Michael Jackson the musical.
Does that mean we can talk about Walt Disney, how his post-death makes him sound so much better than his real life?
Yes! Yes! Like, no, that's the other thing. Like, the whitewashing of history and all of, like the fact that Disney was a Nazi, that happened. And it still happens. Hell, the fact that, like, Disney money in Florida went to the Don't Say Gay bill. Like, that's still happening. Like, they released a movie that possibly had a queer character in it, and I was like, oh, that's gone. It's like, no, they are still responsible for that law and funding a Republican Congress in Florida. No, like that is existing. And that's why I said earlier, I do think the longer that somebody is dead, the farther away they get from any consequences, from any negative impacts on their legacy or their memory. And like as the generations turn over, it just becomes more, because the generation before that, when they're not active and talking about it, and they may be the ones who remember it. So like
what I'm thinking about in with the time thing specifically is like the Rat Pack. Mm. I feel like there was like plenty of stuff that they were involved in that was like not great, but people are like, oh, it's like it's fun, yeah. 50 stuff. And I'm like, yeah, no, but it's also got some bad stuff in there, and we maybe should acknowledge that. But like you said, it's been so long that people are just like, whatever, it's just fun music.
Speaking of the Rat Pack,
we're gonna make a Kingsman trailer.
They
should never make another Kingsman trailer. Please stop with the Kingsman.
That's fair. No, one of the reasons that I think that there is such a fond memory of 50s and 60s music, do you know why, Alex?
Why?
Because so many people died in plane crashes.
Oh.
Like, they literally could not keep messing up their memory, so you just had the bangers they released.
That's true. Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, Big Bopper. Yeah. And actually, something that I learned in this that I didn't know, Randy Rhoads, guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne's solo career, died in a plane crash when he was like 32. While on tour.
A lot of people
like,
died.
Like,
not
even just a random
Led Zeppelin.
Like, yeah. It's, yeah, man. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, lots of people die young, and then we're just like, oh, they gave us good stuff. Let's not talk about how they died.
Or the stories around them. And I do think that like that is, which like it is ultimately when you die, you are no longer here to advocate for yourself, to create anything new. Mm-hmm. You are the sum of all of your deeds in life. And ultimately it is left to the people to remember you, to craft that memory. That is not yours to protect. That is not yours. Like, you can try to build it. But you are really just whatever you have left on this earth, the good and the bad. And that is why I think there is a giant oscillation between people who have, like, we can look up so many of the celebrities have died and so many people that still get praise and find all the skeletons in those closets because they are there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're dead now and people know they're not going to get another album. They're not going to get another whatever. And so that cherishing and that impact a lot of the times matters more. And it's also, I think it was really easy to piss on Hulk Hogan's grave. He was like, wrestling was around without him. It did not matter. Like,
well,
people were forming new memories.
His last WWE appearance, he got booed like heavily.
So,
and it was like, oh, right. Because your legacy and the life that you've left behind has been just like, racism, union busting, stepping on your coworkers to get ahead, like just being a generally not great person. And the fans who like the sport, who like wrestling, were like, you like recognize that and we're like, you're not a part of this.
Yeah.
Because you are ultimately against this. Like, whatever you did for the sport back in the day, you kind of overrode it with all these other things, which I guess that's going back to the does it matter if they're dead or not. It does, because that if you're dead, it's harder to overwrite. Like,
yeah.
And then, I will say at some
Matt,
point,
you had a question. It might have been before your recording of like, well, what if Hulk Hogan had just kind of pissed off for the last 15 years and we hadn't heard from him? Like, how would we be receiving his death now? And that's a very good question.
Yeah, because I mean, last we knew, he was pulling off his T-shirt in the Donald Trump weird whatever thing we got going on there. Yep. And so, no, I do wonder what we have for some people if they just disappeared. And just lived out and ended up dying like Sean Connery on an island. And nobody knew where he was. I think he was.
I didn't find out that he believed that everybody should beat their wives until I was like out of college.
No, yeah. And I mean, and then it just turns.
That's outlandish enough that my first impulse was like, well, surely that's not what he said. I should Google it.
No,
Google it, that's what
he said.
No,
that was one of the ones. No, that's not one of those we took out of context. It was one of those. That was a quote.
That wasn't a snippet. That was, in fact, his whole point.
That would be a lot of work to, I don't know how you could possibly put that in a different context where it's an okay.
And you know what? I still watch League of Extraordinary Gentlemen because me and a dozen other people really like that movie.
Isn't bad, just nobody cared about it. But the question becomes, I mean, at the end of the day, the question becomes, I guess for me, obviously we talk about life and death, but it does become like, with the whole time factor and everything else of like, honestly, how much does it matter, to be fair? Like, should, and like I said, what do we do? Because it is very much of like, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, I'm sure we could do away with that movie, but like, we start talking about some of these other things.
Bond
like,
doesn't exist without Connery.
Well, I mean, you got Roger Moore, but I do
well,
think Sean,
well, yeah,
like
no,
Sean
but
Connery, Moore,
Connery
but.
Like, that was the apex of, like, Roger Moore started, right. But like, that was where it really took off, especially like outside of the UK.
Right. And so the whole point we got here is like, what do you do with this stuff then? Because it's like, oh, well, you just, we lock in the vault and say it was important, but they had bad people in it. Or we could do the terrible thing, which we saw, where we just start censoring everything, which is also weird. Do we just like Photoshop them out of the entire movie or something? Or we just, you know, cut out the scene? But like, it does become a weird pinnacle thing of like, okay, cool, they suck, but like, what do we do with all this content, I guess, or art or entertainment? Because unless you're just going to burn it all, like, it's there and a lot of it is, quote unquote, good, or how we want it. Because I mean, I think the worst part we have is, I think what's worse than the people who say they're going to enjoy it quietly are the people who all of a sudden come around and say, no, this person actually made terrible music, or this person actually made terrible
books.
Oh
yeah, hated their art.
Yeah! Like,
those are the worst people.
No, you know what? Like, fuck. This is funny. The people saying Neil Gaiman was a hack, yeah, you know what? I got my PhD because I read American Gods. And I went to go do a PhD in religion and how pop culture forms our views on it. Guess what? I don't fucking touch his shit outside of the Sandman, which kicked his ass out for everybody else to do it. Mm-hmm. But that is because, like, that is a seminal work for me. And guess what? I'm not going to say he was a hack. He's a really good world builder, really good fucking writer. He's also a rapist. So, like, don't separate the two.
Just choose not to do it. What's that one? The heartbreaking worst person you know just made a good point.
Yes.
But it's like, worst person you know just made good art.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, do I wish that his art sucked and we could say that he never contributed anything meaningful? Sure, that would be easier. But instead, it's just like, no, like, that terrible person made some, like, pretty banger books.
Yeah. And comics.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, it's a whole weird thing of, I mean, because there's also a question of like, well, why is this anyone's responsibility to decide what to do with someone's art afterwards? And I think it is a personal question of like, what, like you guys said earlier, what's your line? Where, what is the thing that you're like, I will not watch this or engage with this or whatever, or, you know, any of that. And it moves for everyone. And it's a hard thing, I think, to judge. Because like you're saying, you're like, I grew up watching John Wayne movies. I didn't know Sean Connery was horrible until I was this old. Like, so you have all of this formative experience with it. And then you're like, okay, do I let this grenade destroy all of that in me?
Yeah.
Or do I need to dig through it and figure out what I can keep and what I can't?
I think that's obviously where we started with. And obviously we talked about the dead and other thing. But I do think at the end of the day, how stuff affects you as a person and what that art, entertainment, book, whatever does for you in this moment and everything of like, I'm supposed to hate John Wayne when you have formal memories of me and my grandfather, my grandpa. And it's like, oh, well, I need to. And then to be fair, I think there are some parts where, guess what? I don't think she should have to work through that. At the end of the day, it is what it is.
No,
and
you know,
I do
what
think
I
this whole,
like, sorry, grandpa, I'm deleting a bunch of memories.
Yeah,
that I had
no, you know what? No. The way I came out with it is cool. If somebody's like gung ho John Wayne now, knowing what they know, okay, like, you're weird. I'm not going to trust you, especially if you're white. But also, if you just want to talk about how good his fucking movies were, like, his movies were really good. Like, they were really good. And I'm not going to give up that. I'm not.
Oh, no, because I'm saying, I do think at some point, a lot of the stuff, we call it art because of the emotional and whatever art people say. Mm-hmm. And so if you are saying all these things of whether the inspirational, the representational, the emotional, the formidable, or whatever buzzword we got in 2025 on what, how art and entertainment work and function on the human brain or body or whatever else, this whole thing of like, we need to basically start looking at entertainment and stuff and just like, we're going to work through and do stuff, like, no, this stuff is formidable for people. Like, we talk about when you're growing up, whether it's formidable memories with somebody else or an actual dead living relative, or, you know, like a tough part of your life or just something you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have some interconnected tissue in there. And I do think the more you try to sit on that, the more you're just going to damage whatever was there in the first place. And now you're even more messed up.
Yeah. I mean, and I think too, like, I think of two things. I think, like, one, I think of, like, all the terrible, like, people that have come out after they've done written like horrible things to comic book, like horrible things, racist things in comics. We don't throw out the mm-hmm. character. That character is still there. And I think yeah. about that one thing. But then like I do also like just stop and think about like when I was younger. So Tommy Hilfiger is a racist. And like when I was younger, one of the big things that he said was that he didn't want Mexicans, like specific Mexicans using it as a term for immigrants, wearing his clothes because he's an American brand. And that was something. So there were two camps, right? In my family, my mother would not let us even look at anything Tommy Hilfiger because mm-hmm. she was like, I'm not going to give that racist man my money. My aunt, on the other hand, continued to actually did not buy him before, started buying Tommy Hilfiger
to be petty
because
about
she
it.
Was like, no, a Mexican will wear your clothes and a Mexican will afford your clothes. And you know what? You may never know that. But I'm still going to do it because I'm not going to be out of this thing that you have told me you don't want me to do. And I do think that there, it may be a bad example because it's not a work, but like there does come a point. And I think that we are having to do it a lot more often because we know too much about everybody.
Yeah.
Where do you take something back and do you make it your own? Or do you take something back and do you say fuck this? Like I will tarnish the shit out of their memory, and I and we've seen it with some comic book characters, and I'll do it with the thing that they use to do the fuck shit in the first place.
Well, isn't that the whole point of Lovecraft at this point?
Yes, it is.
Because we always go back to that, and I'm just like, but yeah. we acknowledge everything, but we still love to use all his stuff.
Am
but
I wrong? I thought Lovecraft like repented later in life and was like, fucking monster.
No, he didn't.
He didn't?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
For some reason, I thought that he was like, yeah, no, I was an idiot. But I was going to say, there's also...
He also named his cat that certain thing. And like, I don't care if you apologize for that.
That's fair. Yeah, that's an extreme choice to have made.
And but it's also like, because of his history that like Matt said, like that is why Lovecraft Country happened. And like, when you listen to those showmakers and they talk about this, it is like he created a world that went beyond him, and he doesn't get to keep that. This can be ours too, and we are going to make it ours. So here is this black show exploring this. And I think that like, but that takes a level of understanding complexity and literacy that is a lot harder than burn this person or never read this thing again.
Reclaiming is a much trickier thing.
Yeah, and it is harder. Not everyone's gonna want to do it. And I think that that's like, ultimately, I do think that we all have our hard lines. And I mean, we see it with the people who are boycotting Microsoft but supporting Neil Druckmann's The Last of Us for the, like, you know, like we all have our own lines, but we literally gerrymander our morality around art. Like, that's literally what we do.
And how we think of people. I think also there is something to, and I don't know how strongly I feel this, but I want to put this idea out there. There is a certain validity to the we didn't know.
I don't disagree with that.
Like, you know, if someone walked into my house and was like, oh, you have Harry Potter books and Neil Gaiman books, I'd be like, yeah, dude, I didn't know that they were like that when I got them. Like, those were just things that, those are books that I bought as a child. I had no way of knowing that she was going to turn out the way that she did.
But we have a lot of Richard Dawkins books in our household. It's been fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that thing of like, in terms of like what you have, what you engage with. And there is just this whole window of like, I mean, and it's the window is shorter now because this goes back to the, when you've been dead for a long time, you're distanced from it. And also the further back your controversies were, the slower they were to leak because news moved slower. Now it's Ariana Grande licked a bunch of donuts and we know about it that night.
Yeah.
You should be shamed for that though. Like,
absolutely. That was,
no, the girl that licked terrible, the ice like, cream ruined the entire world.
Yeah. But it's like somebody does something and we know about it before we sit down for dinner. And it's like, oh yeah, there was a whole era where that wasn't a thing. And that's how these people got to be terrible and keep making art or be cool and make art that goes unappreciated because they're Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. And I do think too, like, I do think that there are certain things that do come with like the times. Cause it's like, I love Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Willem Dafoe is in brownface. I really don't care. Mm. Like, I really don't care. Antonio Banderas is not a Mexican. I found that out when I was 23. My mother still refuses to accept that. Like Alien. I'm never going to throw out Alien, even though Vasquez is literally just a Jewish woman in brownface. Like, that's a reality. And I don't go into that saying, oh, that doesn't exist. It's like, oh, yeah, no, like, that's totally she's in brownface. But, like, this is still one of my favorite movies ever. And
yeah,
you can do that. And it is, like, all of these are personal decisions. I also think we need to understand what is actively harmful and what isn't. And I think when we look at memories, I do think that if you think somebody is an absolute piece of shit, you should piss on their grave. You should make sure that everybody around you doesn't see them in a positive light. And that's fine. But also, like,
Well, I think obviously we kind of tangent off a little bit here and what we're about, but I do think what we get here with this, where we start off with, I think it's like probably the easiest way of probably why it was intriguing, because I think as you get into like actors, actresses, directors, and everything else, at the end of the day, Alien is a movie of like 25 people, like acting, and then like 100 plus people working, director and whatever. Mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan basically was a wrestler, and while there were other wrestlers, at the end of the day, he, you know, wrestling for the most part is one-on-one type stuff. You know, Ozzy was in a band, but also he was solo and other stuff and frontman. So you get this more like individualistic like type things happening. Not 100 percentile, but like, and I probably the Neil Gaiman stuff, like he's an author. He may have maybe a co-author eventually, but like there's not like a whole collaborative ensemble of teams. And so like when you get this whole like, so I do think we get in the weird stuff of like, oh, you know, we throwing out one thing, even though there's 25 other people and they're a background actor or actresses, or maybe they're a co-lead or whatever, or maybe they, you know, this was just part of a game development and like that was made by 700 engineers or whatever else. And I do think it gets a little more interesting of how we have some of that conversation. I do think with the, when you start looking at individual stuff, I think where music is probably where we get a lot of it, because then they, you are just the artist. And while you do have some bands, you know, you are, you know, most of the time your bandmates know what's going on, so they're pretty much enabling or whatever anyways. But you get, you know, basically you're more in control, per se, of the perception, the control, what's happening around everything versus, I signed a contract to play in this movie. I didn't have any control who they casted. It was kind of is what it is. Which we know we've heard before from people going, I didn't know who was in this movie when I signed on, and they signed them. And it was either I leave the project or I just work with this. And we didn't talk to each other. We did our scenes and we left.
Yeah.
You hear it all the time.
Or we weren't even in scenes together.
Yes. Or that too.
Well, you hear it happening all the time with people around Jared Leto, like literally being on stuff with him and working around him. Or Army of the Dead literally like cutting out TJ Miller and putting was it Tig Nicotero like in a volume to put her in the middle of the thing, and I think that that's like the other thing too, is it's just kind of like those are choices.
And I think the other thing for me with all of this is I feel like it's almost, is it an exclusively modern issue? I don't know that 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, people were talking quite this critically about like the morality of their media spending, you know, and like the is it good to still have that movie on your
show? No, because one of the worst things that happened was we all of a sudden cared what celebrities did, and we have stan culture and everything else, to be completely honest.
Well, the funny thing
is, we care way too much about rich people.
Well, the funny thing is back then, like, people were more angry about the times that celebrities took stands that went against the status quo. Like, nobody cared that Marlon Brando, like, sexually assaulted, like, women on the set of his movies. But they did care that he had a Native American woman go up and accept an award for him at the Oscars. And that's the thing that we still remember now. And that's what he got shit for back then. And I do think that that really is, like, it has to be public facing. It has to be known. And now we know everything.
Yeah.
But also it's the scale.
Yeah. And also knowing how much the culture shift affects that. Because that example specifically, now people are like, hell yeah, Marlon Brando, great choice. And that was the opposite of how we felt back then. Or I think Ozzy Osbourne is another good example of this, of like, if he had died in the like the height of the satanic panic, would not have had the reception that he did mm-hmm. on dying, like would not have had the kind words, the people sharing videos of him and how great he was. And it's that cultural shift and acceptance towards like metal and the occult and, you know, whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, if we hadn't had that shift, like this wouldn't be the conversation that we're having at all.
Yeah.
It would be like, hey, these two terrible people died. Let's talk about it. So yeah, it's just all weird and something to, I don't even have like a good answer for, oh, this is how everyone should feel after listening to our episode. Cause I don't know how I feel after this conversation. Like it is a big, complicated, weird thing. But yeah.
I think there's a lot of, I don't disagree, like the culture shifts we have, there's acceptance what we have, there's moving on what we have. Because I mean, like I said, there does come, whether we want to admit it or not, with time, it's both good and bad of like, I don't want to say whether we quote unquote should care, because always that feels like it's kind of dismissive of things. But at the end of the day, of like, you know, if we've like moving on or like we've done stuff and it's like cool. I mean, because the other weird part, to be completely honest, is like, if I can still be quote unquote mad, but if the people involved in the altercation are not mad, I don't know what me being mad is doing for any of this. And then we add in the fact I don't know these people or vice versa or anything else. And blah, blah, blah. So it does turn into this whole point of like, you're just keeping undue anger. And some of that, you know, if you want to do it, go for it. But I do think as we move, like I said with the Ozzy Osbourne, if we move past stuff, like everything else, I'm like, yeah, he ended up being an old grandpa. I mean, we talk about the Israel stuff, I guess. But like outside of that, there really wasn't much he really seemed to did in the last 20 plus 30 years that anybody can recall was.
It is really 30. Just the Israel stuff. That's nothing else he's been. Yeah.
As I said, he just kind of was old grandpa and did stuff. And while that was cute and funny, but it wasn't like we saw like a lot of bad stuff. And we just kept on, like I said,
he
I
actually
do wonder...
mentored a lot of young artists and not in like a bad way. Like he tried to.
Yeah. I mean, like his last whole, like, well, a week before he died, he was doing a concert, raising money for charity in his last thing. Like if you end up doing some stuff, like we said, it will eventually, whether we like to admit or not, outweigh the scales versus like, I do wonder if Hulk Hogan just basically did his heyday, got rich and disappeared. What happened to him? I think you can have the conversation like we talked about with Sean Connery, where like he just kind of left everybody alone, left on a private island and didn't do anything until he just died. And you can still have that conversation. But in the day of the grand culture of like, should we be like grabbing the pitchforks and going to grab our boats and fly to that island? I don't know if that matters.
Definitely. I think that does it for me this week. Do you guys have any other closing thoughts on this?
No. Sometimes
people are complicated. Being a human's complicated.
Yeah. Also ask the question, is this person actively hurting me now? And is like, or and also recognize that everybody's lines are different. And you can think about those lines all you want. I sure sideways eyes some people with some things. But, you know, it's all subjective.
Have
at the end of the
lines.
Day, it's art. Everybody just wants their little treat.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, you know, try to be consistent with your lines.
Yeah.
If you can. But
don't,
I mean,
gerrymander
like,
your moral lines.
Yeah. I say, like, there's going to be some gerrymandering where it's like, well, I don't like that he did this, but it's okay that he did it.
Yes.
That this other guy did.
All I can
say,
my last thought is we can all, there's definitely some artists out there that we probably should always hate on.
Yes.
But I know a
some
lot more people.
Some deserve to go
out.
Under the jail.
Does everybody just want to take a turn saying one?
No. But what I was saying is, but at the end of the day, there's a lot more people out there, particularly people in actual power, doing actual things that probably deserve to be buried under concrete.
So, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Save your energy for the right people.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Matt. Well, that does it for this week. If you want more listening at home, we've got it, But Why Those on Blue Sky, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate, which costs money, to the site by going to butwhytho.net/support. Also, butwhytho.net is our Blue Sky handle, so you can find us real easy. Everything that you give goes towards keeping the site going, paying our writers, keeping the lights on, just like it's everything that you can give us is useful, even subscriptions to the newsletter, reviews of the podcast, all that stuff goes a long way, and we really appreciate it. Kate, Matt, thank you for joining me. This was a good conversation that I'm going to have to go think about a lot more. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time.